Hey listeners, my name is Sam and I'm currently a childhood education and English major at Russell Sage College in downtown Troy. Today, I am really excited to share with you some of the research and work I've been doing in my English course, The Roaring Twenties in 2020. For this class, we are really immersing ourselves in 1920s literature and culture, finding threaded themes through our texts and connecting it all back to our own lives, as well as American mainstream culture today. One of the things that has really stood out to me in a few of our texts is the way that characters have been represented as consumers. One text in particular stood out to me because the consumerism in the text was quite excessive and seemed to have the purpose of owning things for the societal status that they gave you rather than for the true usefulness of the product in the characters' lives. This novel was Babbitt by Sinclair Lewis. If you've never read this novel before, the most basic synopsis I could give you is that it's a satirical novel about a middle-aged businessman who is tired of his painfully boring middle-class life. He attempts to rebel against this life and, unsurprisingly, falls back on the safety of social conformity. This conformity to societal pressures is the main critique of the novel, and one of the biggest ways that it is presented is through the characters' ownership of specific items and their actions as consumers in the text. A couple really poignant examples of this are in Chapter 1 and in Chapter 5. The first being when Babbitt wakes to his alarm and states, quote, "It was the best of nationally advertised and quantitatively produced alarm clocks, with all modern attachments." He then speaks about the features of the clock and finishes by saying, "Socially, it was almost as creditable as buying expensive cord tires," end quote. The second being when he buys a cigar lighter for his car, describing it, quote, "not only, as the placard on the counter observed, a dandy little refinement, lending the last touch of class to a gentleman's auto, but a priceless time saver. By freeing him from halting the car to light a match, it would any month or two easily save 10 minutes, end quote. Babbitt's pride in both of these items were based on their perceived societal value and his belief that owning these items gave him a higher standing in society. His descriptions of the items were interesting, too, because he describes them in the same way that the products were advertised, which says a lot about how advertising can easily sway our opinions about the quality or usefulness of a product. Advertising existed well before the 1920s, but as production began a relatively steep increase in this decade, it was more imperative than ever to have products sell, and advertisements for these products were inescapable. These advertisements ran the gamut for the kinds of products they were selling, but this decade also saw a majority of homes in the U.S. equipped with electricity, so it was commonplace for a great number of advertisements to be selling electric household appliances. Other advertisements that you would probably often come across would be for things like ready-made clothing, as this was a big new thing at the time, and cars, of course. Evidenced by the rise in mass production and the boom of advertising as the main strategy to sell product, it is clear that consumerism was incredibly important at this time. But I was curious as to why this was. Why did people at this time put so much social stock on the things that they were buying? I came across this incredibly complicated article, "Consumerism and the Crisis, Wither the American Dream," by Maria Ivanova, which was able to shed some light on that for me. The basic purpose of this article was to talk about the history and the downfalls of American capitalist consumerism, and this history, unsurprisingly, starts with the 1920s, where mass production of product, a rise in working wages, and this ideal of the American dream created a dangerously consumption-focused society. The American dream ideal being described here as having, quote, "promoted the accumulation of commodities as a social norm, civic duty, display of individual achievement, and a key source of life satisfaction," end quote. Basically, to be a happy American citizen during this time, it was imperative that you had access to a large assortment of goods. Does this sound familiar to anyone else, or is that just me? Learning about all of this, I felt like I could almost just switch the dates from 1920s to 2020, and no one would even notice. The biggest difference being that while the 1920s can be imagined as an incredibly prosperous time for the country, I don't feel like that same can be said for the U.S. today. Ivanova's article points to the fact that the 1920s helped create this consumerism bubble that in the present day has gone way past its bursting point, but our patterns of consumption have been stubbornly unchanged. The biggest change we've seen in this area is just a move from mass production of product within the U.S., which had now become mass import of product into the U.S. from other countries. Which brings me to the parts of consumerism today that have grabbed my interest in the last year or so and that I feel are important to talk about, and they are conscious and/or ethical consumerism. Being a conscious or ethical consumer requires a person to be mindful of a lot of different aspects of the purchases they are making. This includes being mindful of the product itself, what it's made of, and are these materials healthy, sustainable, eco-friendly, as well as the seller of the product. Where is the seller getting this product? Is the seller treating and paying their workers fairly? Do the seller's morals fit with your own? You also have to be aware of yourself as a consumer and be conscious of how much you are consuming and why you might be consuming certain things. With all of these factors at play, it's not hard to imagine that attempting to be a conscious or ethical consumer can be frustrating and doesn't seem like it would be worth it. An article in the Journal of Business Ethics, titled An Exploratory Study into the Factors Impeding Ethical Consumption by authors Jeffrey Bray, Nick Johns, and David Kilburn, discusses the different elements that have the potential to impede people from making ethical decisions in their purchases. Some of the basic factors for how we as consumers choose what to purchase are things like our age, gender, education, wealth, beliefs, and our confidence in our beliefs and abilities to make decisions. Some of the factors that can get in the way of making ethical purchases are accessibility to ethical products, whether this be locational accessibility or financial accessibility, the way products are marketed to us, the inertia or compulsion of purchasing, and the skepticism of the quality of these ethical products, as well as the effort it takes to make more ethical purchases. The couple things in this list that I really want to emphasize are the accessibility to ethical products and the compulsion of purchasing. In terms of what I feel connects us here in 2020 most to 1920s consumerism is the compulsion we get to buy things. I feel like it's gotten to a point where it doesn't even matter what it is we are buying, just the act of making purchases makes us feel good, especially if that purchase is for something that is wanted and not necessarily needed. This compulsion to buy is also not aided by the fact that, just like in the 1920s, we have a barrage of advertisements put in front of us on a daily basis. And this is even worse for us today because of smart products and their ability to track our search and purchase histories, as well as listen in for certain smart products, and then use this data to decide which advertisements we should be seeing online that will make it more likely for us to spend our money. If we are continuously feeling the impulse to buy, we are likely not going to be thinking about whether or not our purchases are ethical. The second part of this is accessibility to ethical products. One of the hardest parts of being an ethical consumer, in my own experience, is actually having access to ethical products, both physically and financially. Ethical products are generally not the most mass-produced products or widely stocked on the shelves of easy-to-access stores. More importantly, though, ethically produced products are often more expensive than their counterparts, and this can make them difficult to access financially for those who are not very wealthy. With much of the U.S. population being in the working class or poverty-stricken, not many people are in a financial position to be conscious about the products they are purchasing. For those of us that are, though, spending a few extra dollars on ethical versions of our favorite products creates greater demand for these products and can lead to greater accessibility. Some other great tips from Kristen Wong in a New York Times article is to search for B Corp certified businesses and shop with them as they are leaders in socially responsible production. Do research on your favorite brands and see if their beliefs and actions align with your own. Reduce your carbon footprint by traveling closer to home, buying longer lasting products when possible, and even shopping secondhand. And last but not least, embracing the life of minimalism and being aware of what you are buying and whether you truly need it. American consumerism has grown since the 1920s to be quite a destructive force in its own right, and I hope that I was able to give you some greater insight into consumerism's history and some of the ways we can improve ourselves and support a greater movement into more ethically produced and consumed products. Thanks so much for listening, and goodbye for now.